What if your chronic pain isn't betraying you, but protecting you? What if that autoimmune flare-up, that inexplicable fatigue, that tumor growing silently in the dark isn't a biological malfunction, but a message written in the only language your body knows? This is the radical proposition that has transformed how we understand illness. Our bodies become the storytellers when our minds refuse to speak the truth. Since this idea emerged, it has rippled through medicine, psychology, and millions of living rooms where people finally recognize themselves in these pages. The cultural impact has been seismic, from medical schools incorporating emotional health into treatment protocols, to patients demanding doctors ask not just what are your symptoms, but what happened to you. In an era of skyrocketing autoimmune diseases and mysterious chronic conditions, this framework offers something medicine often withholds, the possibility that understanding our emotional lives might be as crucial as any prescription. Mary's hands were dying. What began as a sewing needle puncture that wouldn't heal revealed itself as Raynaud's phenomenon, her finger arteries narrowing until gangrene set in. This was merely the opening act of scleroderma, an autoimmune disease where the body wages war against itself. For 8 years, doctors treated her symptoms while never asking the question that mattered most: what in your life made saying no impossible? When that question finally came, Mary's story poured out. Childhood abuse, abandonment at 7, decades of caring for everyone except herself. She had never voiced these truths to another soul. Her body, it seemed, was screaming what her voice could not. A haunting pattern emerges across autoimmune conditions, cancer, and degenerative diseases. People who cannot establish boundaries, who reflexively prioritize others' needs, whose niceness becomes pathological. Medical training ignores psychoneuroimmunology, the evidence connecting emotions to immunity, despite overwhelming proof. Multiple sclerosis destroys the myelin sheath insulating nerve fibers. Natalie, a former nurse with MS, watched her symptoms flare when she stopped caretaking others. Even as her husband grew emotionally distant and unfaithful after cancer treatment, she kept sacrificing herself. "My body says no to me frequently, and I keep going," she admitted. Research confirms relationship difficulties or financial insecurity nearly quadruple MS exacerbation risk. Barbara, a psychotherapist with MS, initially resisted connecting her disease to childhood. Her symptoms appeared after inviting a dangerous former client into her home, a boundary violation revealing her core wound. Truth emerged. "My mother did not know boundaries. That's what our fights were about, her inability to recognize where she ended and I began." Consider Jacqueline Dupre, the brilliant cellist who died of MS at 42. Outwardly compliant, she expressed her deepest passions only through her cello, maintaining symbiotic fusion with her mother while hiding her authentic self. Her body ultimately refused to carry a life where her true self remained buried. The deadliest stress operates silently, chronically, beneath conscious awareness, often feeling normal to those who've known nothing else. Some become addicted to stress hormones, finding calm unbearable because agitation feels like home. Stress isn't subjective anxiety, but objective biological events, measurable changes in brain chemistry, hormone levels, immune function. When you perceive threat, your hypothalamus triggers a cascade, flooding your system with cortisol. This hypothalamus-pituitary-adrenal axis affects virtually every tissue, dampening immunity, ulcerating intestines, thinning bones. The response that saves you from immediate danger destroys you when chronically activated. Three factors universally trigger stress: uncertainty, lack of information, and loss of control. Notice what's missing: actual danger. The stress response activates when you feel helpless, not necessarily when you are. Alan, a 47-year-old engineer, developed esophageal cancer despite never smoking or drinking. He worked 11-hour days, 7 days weekly, while his marriage crumbled. Only a 15% survival chance taught him to say no. Emotional competence requires four capacities: feeling emotions enough to recognize stress, expressing emotions to assert needs, distinguishing present reactions from past wounds, and awareness of genuine needs rather than performing for approval. ALS patients share a haunting psychological signature: childhood emotional deprivation, relentless self-drive, inability to accept help, denial of pain. Their conspicuous niceness masks weak self-identity. Authentic emotions, especially rage and anguish, remain buried beneath rigid duty to others. Remarkably, some have recovered from ALS symptoms through unconventional self-love after recognizing lifelong self-sacrifice patterns. During one session where Alexa grieved intensely, her muscle tone dramatically improved. The body had briefly shown what healing might look like. Despite medical skepticism, evidence linking stress to breast cancer is compelling. Natural killer cells, crucial for fighting cancer, are more active in patients who express anger and have strong social support. Women are more prone to breast cancer if their childhoods featured emotional disconnection, if they repress emotions, particularly anger, lack nurturing relationships, and compulsively caretake others. Michelle had a benign breast lump that turned malignant during extreme stress, tracing her cancer to alcoholic parents who taught her to prioritize everyone's needs above her own. Male breast cancer patients show identical patterns. Melvin Crew was diagnosed after public humiliation, his hyper-conscientiousness stemming from childhood where parental approval depended on achievement, not unconditional love. Anna, a breast cancer survivor with genetic predisposition, believes stress from her abusive first marriage contributed to her illness. Despite healthy habits, her self-destructive pattern of never feeling good enough damaged her body and soul. She cannot say no. I'll lie to people, I'll do anything but say I don't want to. Betty Ford's perfectionist mother modeled emotional repression. My mother never came to us with her problems. She just shouldered them. When I couldn't shoulder my problems, I lost respect for myself. Ford doesn't recognize how her childhood shaped her emotional repression and harsh self-judgment, traits that created not only her alcoholism, but also, as one researcher put it, a good recipe for breast cancer. Your body functions as an integrated supersystem where brain, nervous system, immune organs, and endocrine glands communicate constantly through biochemical signals. The hub is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, activating whenever you perceive threat, including psychological threats like uncertainty, lack of control, and unmet emotional needs. Cancer begins with DNA damage. Most damaged cells either repair themselves or die. Stress impairs both mechanisms, explaining why some smokers develop lung cancer while others don't. During tumor growth, your body's internal environment either supports or inhibits progression through hormones. Many cancers are hormone-dependent. Breast cancer cells have receptors for estrogen and stress hormones. Studies show psychological states directly affect hormone function. Experiments with female monkeys revealed that social status changes immediately altered cortisol levels and reproductive function. Cancer isn't external invasion, but internal processes gone wrong. Chronic stress confuses the immune system, preventing recognition of mutated cells. The most consistent psychological risk factor: inability to express emotion, particularly anger. Japanese men who migrate to America experience 2.5 times higher prostate cancer incidence than those remaining in Japan, despite similar rates of dormant malignant cells. Your genes load the gun, but your life pulls the trigger. Rachel's rheumatoid arthritis first flared during a Jewish holiday. Born prematurely in 1961, she spent her first month in an incubator without touch, followed by a childhood with an emotionally unavailable mother who had been abandoned before Rachel's birth. Rachel learned to expect abandonment and constantly seek approval. Her suppressed anger runs so deep that her pet rabbit refuses her touch when she's unconsciously upset. Research confirms the link between early emotional deprivation and adult illness. An Italian study found women with genital cancers felt less close to their parents. A European study showed 40% of cancer patients lost a parent before 17, 2.5 times the control group rate. The Johns Hopkins 30-year study revealed medical students reporting lower childhood closeness developed more mental illness, high blood pressure, heart disease, and cancer by midlife. Harvard undergraduates who negatively perceived parental caring had 90% illness rates by midlife versus 25% among those with positive perceptions. Physical touch proves crucial for development. As Ashley Montague writes, one learns love not by instruction, but by being loved. Just 15 minutes of daily tactile stimulation significantly accelerates premature babies' weight gain and development. Social-emotional interactions decisively influence brain development, regulating stress response systems from birth. Romanian orphans raised with minimal human contact showed abnormal cortisol levels, disruptions associated with autoimmune disease and cancer. Parents aren't merely providers, but biological regulators of children's immature systems. Beyond physical proximity, human attachment requires attunement, parents tuned in to the child's emotional needs. This instinctive process is easily disrupted when parents are stressed or never received attunement themselves. The wound isn't what happened, it's what didn't happen. The attunement that never came, the emotional recognition that remained absent, the authentic self that learned to hide. Parents aren't to blame for their children's illnesses. Parenting styles reflect unresolved wounds, not lack of love. Selfless nurturing is embedded in the mammalian brain. When loving feelings are constricted, it's because parents themselves suffer deep hurt. Even hardened addicts feel their deepest pain about abandoned children, and without exception, they were abused or abandoned in childhood. This isn't blame, it's understanding transmission. Animal research confirms parenting styles pass through generations. In rhesus monkeys, 20% are high reactors, showing depressive behaviors when separated from mothers. Yet when raised by nurturing mothers, they develop normally and adopt similar nurturing styles. This transmission is physiological. Maternal care literally shapes brain development. Rat pups receiving more licking and grooming developed more anxiety-regulating receptors. Anxious mothers tend to raise anxious offspring, with maternal care programming stress responses by altering neural development. Researchers could predict, before birth, how an infant would behave at 1 year based on the parents' narrative patterns about their own childhood. Beyond family lie broader social determinants. Socioeconomic circumstances may be more important health determinants than medical or lifestyle factors. Income affects not just access to resources, but sense of control, critical for stress reduction. What breaks the chain? Awareness, acceptance, facing your story without flinching. Healing requires recognizing emotional patterns, reclaiming anger, establishing boundaries, seeking genuine connection, and honoring your creative self. True healing begins not with positive thinking that denies reality, but with authentic thinking that faces all truths. As one therapist advised, if you face the choice between feeling guilt and resentment, choose the guilt every time. Resentment is soul suicide. Your body has been trying to tell you something. When the body says no, it's not giving up on you. It's fighting for the life you deserve, the one where your voice finally matches your truth.